We got a lot to cover this week and not a whole lot of time to do it as we head into the GM's meetings and what they're going to be talking about as we discuss officiating and LTIR, the Evgeny Dadonov situation and how all that played out, the Edmonton Oilers playoff situation and my thoughts on it, and we honor the late Eugene Melnyk. All that coming up here on the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Welcome, welcome. As always, it is March 29th, Tuesday, recording at about 11:15 here on the show. I'm always worried about recording early on the show, simply due to the fact that news, for some reason, at least with me, always breaks Tuesday, like, afternoon. And for me, by the time the afternoon rolls around, I have too much going on. Like, I'm doing house renovations. I've got to get prepared for things. I have a full-time show. I write for the Hockey Writers, and I try to get a lot of stuff done later on in the afternoons. And this is, like, the one free time where I know I've got, like, a good two-hour chunk time frame opened up where I can do this and sit down and actually give my full 100% focus and dedication to. So hopefully that's not the case, but even if it is, there's a lot that's happened and transpired over the last week or so that we will get to. Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. Follow me along on social media at Kyle Grimard. My latest on the Hockey Writers involving the Vancouver Canucks is up. I break down that piece, and I've actually gotten some good feedback on it, on how the Canucks trade deadline, it could not have gone any better for them. Like, not only did they clear cap, they did it without having to move JT Miller, Connor Garland, Brock Besser. They've got the core there still of, you know, Bo Horvat and Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson with those other guys I mentioned. And they've got cap to then sign Besser, this offseason. And they might still have money. They might move some more in the offseason, and then they can bring back Miller. And the core is all staying there. And then they also upgraded defensively. They're going to get some room with LT, with there's the retirement cap with Roberto Luongo. He makes over $3 million counting against their cap. That comes off the books. They've also got 1.5 in Halak that's coming off the books. It could not have played out better. If you want to go check it out, it's at the Hockey Writers. But we got to get to a lot of different things today. GM meetings are happening, and there's a lot of topics that they're going to be discussing. I'm going to bring up two that I don't know in length of how much they're talking about. I just know that it's being brought up. We'll bring up the Evgeny Dadonov situation and how he's actually been really good for the team since, you know, he wasn't traded by them. And then I want to talk Oilers a little bit too, and I want to break down what I think of them, because they won last night. They won decisively 6-1 against Arizona, and everyone's just forgetting what happened on Saturday. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. But it's only right to start the show today with some tragic news that broke last night. Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk passed away yesterday at the age of just 62 from the hockey from the Ottawa Senators hockey organization. They tweeted out saying, "It is with great sadness that the family of Eugene Melnyk and the Ottawa Senators hockey organization announced the passing on March 28th, 2022, after an illness he faced with determination and courage." That was from a team statement. Melnyk purchased the Senators back in 2003 when they basically faced bankruptcy, and then 4 years later went to the Stanley Cup Finals. They have 9 playoff berths during his tenure there. And before I go on, the NHL posted saying they mourn the passing of Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk. The words passion, commitment define who he was as an owner, whether it was in the boardroom with his governors, on the rink with his team, or in the community with his philanthropy and his deep care for the game and everything. So that was from the actual team. A lot of what has been said too, it talked about the bettering the lives of those in need, particularly the undeserved children, organ donation, and most recently, his commitment to his parents' home country of Ukraine. You know, a lot of that's not being brought up in the news. You know, we have seen a lot of, the one thing I will say about Eugene Melnyk, was he perfect? No, none of us are. But he found a way. That team was competitive in a lot of years where not a lot of people thought they'd be competitive. He tried to do right by a lot of players that he knew weren't going to be with the organization for a long period of time. Mark Stone, for example, comes to mind. You know, Mark Stone, they knew they probably weren't going to retain him, and they send him over to the Vegas Golden Knights, and now he's the captain there, and they've been to deep playoff runs. And, you know, I know there was a fallout with Erik Karlsson, but, you know, they got him to San Jose, and, you know, he's in California now, and he's having a pretty solid season this year. And there's other guys on that list too, but, you know, a lot of good that Eugene Melnyk did was never in the public eye. And there were no stories coming out about his commitment to the undeserved children, the fact that, you know, he's part of the organ donation community, and yeah, his family, and he's Ukrainian, and all the work and dedication and everything that he's been doing to try to keep his family safe, none of that's being talked about, or at least in the media here. Maybe in Ottawa, it's a little bit different, but, you know, the players, they did care a lot about him. And more recently, Senators captain Brady Tkachuk came out and said, "Mr. Melnyk provided me, my teammates, and many Sens players who came before us an opportunity to live out a dream. The Ottawa community will miss you greatly. Condolences to you, to your family," Tkachuk wrote in a tweet. Like, he went out of his way to post that. And I don't think that got talked about enough, you know, about how his connection with some of the players, you know, a lot of players did respect him a lot. You know, they understood, you know, there's not a lot of times where players and owners necessarily even connect on any level. And, you know, for Tkachuk to go out of his way, and I know he's the captain, and, you know, it would seem like a PR move and anything like that, but, you know, it's, I think a lot of things that, you know, Eugene did for the community, for his family, for the team, kind of went under the radar, and a lot of bad press came out about him, you know, the most notably about, you know, not wanting to pay your star players, or not being able to sell out those, you know, those playoff games. And, you know, it, as part of the responsibility is on the owner, yes, but, you know, he did everything in his power to make it worthwhile. And he has a very different way of thinking. It's probably why he's a billionaire. You know, I'm not a billionaire, not a millionaire. I have a very different mindset than him, but sometimes you need a different mindset to be successful. And, you know, he ran that organization and was involved with it since 2003. And, you know, for the most part, that team was relevant and had some pretty incredible runs when he was under that role. So he will be missed. The community will be missed. We know he had a battle with an illness prior to, and unfortunately, his battle comes to an end at the age of 62. It was only right that I start the podcast with that. All right. So I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts because I've been trying to keep up, because I haven't been as in tune lately. A lot has been going on, but yesterday and today are the annual GM meetings. They meet with, you know, the NHL, and they go over a few different things that they want to bring to light. They talk about, you know, the future, you know, the cap, the, you know, the way the league is going to go, and the broadcasting rights, everything like that. And oftentimes it is brought up that, you know, GMs can bring things to the table. And a couple of the topics that are apparently being discussed on the table are two of probably the most notable this season. One being the officiating, and two, the use of LTIR, long-term injury reserve. Now, let's get the officiating part out of the way, because we've been talking about it in length here, specifically a couple weeks ago. I don't know what's ever going to change regarding officiating until somebody in some sort of power role brings it up publicly and addresses that it does need a change. It's the unfortunate answer, but it's true. We can go on Twitter all we want and rant about it and talk about it. And it's not to say that you or I are wrong. We just don't have any, we don't have any power. We don't have any say in the matter. And yeah, power can be in numbers, and if it gets brought up enough, then it eventually makes its way up the chain to these meetings, and something does get done about it. And this is the worst part. Apparently, to start the meeting off, the NHL reminded the general managers not to publicly call out or shame the officiating in any way. And this is what I mean by it. This is what I mean, that I don't know if anything's really going to change unless someone like Gary Bettman or someone in a role of power and authority comes and brings something to the table. And apparently multiple GMs were bringing something to do with officiating behind closed doors. Video review is also another one. But to put it in perspective about what I mean, this was, so there are reporters out there, and they try to briefly get some audio from some of the GMs about what they talked about, what they think's going to happen, and they can't really reveal a lot. But one reporter asked General Manager Kyle Dubas, after day one, about the officiating. This was the clip.
Officiating.
Officiating. Everything's great with the officiating.
Like, how can you take anything seriously when one of the major gaps in the league isn't being talked about or called into question by anybody in power, and you can't bring it to light as a general manager? He laughed. And it was like the sarcasm came out. Yeah, the officiating is, it's great. Everything's great. Like, what's the meme? It's fine. Everything's fine. That's the officiating right now to GMs. GMs want to talk about it. They want to bring it up. The NHL literally told GMs to start the meeting off. Remember, guys, don't publicly shame or talk about the referees in any bad way. Wait, who are you protecting? Imagine going to a job. Imagine going to your job. You put in work every day. You bust your ass. You know, but a colleague of yours, a different department, isn't pulling their weight. A department that controls everything in the outcome of how you do your job. And instead of being able to bring it up to your boss or talk about it publicly to other coworkers, you're told from HR, you're not allowed to publicly criticize them. Let me just give you, like, so let's say you work in a sales role, right? You're a sales representative. You're busting your ass. You're working hard. You're trying to get sales. But you have a colleague who is more of like the ambassador, let's just say. And as an ambassador, they're making the company look bad as a whole. And so you go to try to sell a company and try to sell and advertise with you. And they're like, well, no, we don't want to, because your ambassador over there is making the company look foolish. And so to try and make things better, you go to bring it up to your boss and you say, hey, the ambassador sucks right now. We need to change this. You're not allowed to go up and complain to your coworker that your ambassadors are tainting all the hard work you're doing. That's basically what's going on. All the hard work the players are putting in, the grinding, the efforts, the literally bleeding, losing teeth and pieces of them on the ice, calls that are ultimately affecting the outcomes of games. And as a player, as a coach, as a general manager, can't ask questions. Can't be like, hey, we don't think the officiating is fair. This isn't right. Can it change? Now you get fined for doing that. Here's an example for you. Anybody catch the Hurricanes game against the Dallas Stars on March 24th? No. 10 minutes into the first period, there's a battle along the boards between Tyler Seguin and Evgeny Svechnikov. Not even a battle. This is the audio from the Carolina Hurricanes broadcast.
Seguin, and through center come the Stars. A big hit. Svechnikov laid out Seguin, and Seguin slow to get up, and he is wobbled and heading over to the bench. And now we may have an altercation with Svechnikov, maybe having to share some words with the teammates of Sagan as a penalty has been called, and the first power play of the game will belong to Dallas.
Carolina, minor penalty, 37, roughing.
Get a look at Svechnikov and how the play evolved. The stick comes high. You could either call it a cross check or if it's the hand that catches Sagan up high, but there's no doubt that the hands rode up. Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty good, I would have called it a cross check, but Dan O'Rourke called it a roughing penalty and the Dallas
Stars. The home team's broadcast said it was not even roughing, a cross check. And if you haven't seen the video, the puck's not around, Sagan's on the boards, and Evgeny Svechnikov, two hands on his stick, deliberately cross-checks Tyler Sagan in the head. Stick to helmet contact. Direct hit. Doesn't ride the shoulder. He's not going for the puck, so it's an intent to hit Tyler Sagan. 2 minutes for roughing is all that got. No fine. No hearing, no suspension. Remember the Austin Matthews cross check on Rasmus Dahlin? Yeah. 2 weeks ago, I said this, and I said the same thing, that I think he's going to get 2 games. Surely enough, news comes out, he gets 2 games. Do I think he deserves 2 games? No. Do I think it's a suspendable offense? No. Do I think that it was an outdoor game involving one of the bigger teams in bigger markets, involving one of the biggest players, and it was a spectacle for everybody, and everybody before the hearing even happened had already weighed in on Twitter and kind of determine what was going to happen at that point? I don't think it's a suspendable offense. I don't. And I'm not going to change my tune on that. Apparently, unless you're Austin Matthews and the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's not a suspension. All the people online, all the people telling me, well, I mean, you know, in fairness, it was a suspension. Apparently, it's not. Apparently, it's not to anybody else. And I said last Friday, I was talking to two coworkers about this. I watched what happened. It was the night before. I said, if the NHL does not offer a hearing about this, then it is absolutely okay to think that the only reason Austin Matthews got suspended, it was an outdoor game and he plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs. There wasn't even a prompted back and forth. The puck wasn't in sight. It was a straight cross check to the head. 2 minutes. Why wasn't that suspension? Because it was Dallas, Carolina on like a Thursday. If you're not wearing a Leaf or a big red C or your jersey doesn't say Oilers or New York Rangers on it, it's going to fall through the cracks. No one's going to bat an eye. Like, it doesn't matter. Was Sagan hurt? No, he played the game. So did Rasmus Dahlin, though. Man, it feels good to be right. Feels good to be right. 2 weeks ago, I said that. I said, I do not think that Austin Matthews move is a suspension. Not because it shouldn't be, but because any other player in any, and by the way, this is Andrei Svechnikov. This isn't Colin White. This isn't Warren Fogle. This isn't some random third, fourth line player. This is one of the leading goal scorers on the Carolina Hurricanes and one of their elite forwards hitting another elite forward in Tyler Sagan. Nothing. Whatever, man. Whatever. Hence why I don't think anything's changing until someone in power does something about it. Because I can sit here and I can whine and cry about it as much as I can. But I know it's not changing. And I know how much I talk about it. It's not going to change. We just have to come to terms with the fact that the exact same play happened. And I said the same thing on the show. I said something like this is going to happen in a week, a month, 6 weeks from now. And it's not going to get called. And I'm going to bring this back up. It happened 2 weeks later. Direct cross-check to the head. Nothing. Okay, so the other topic they talked about was virtually LTIR and the possibility of a cap hit being carried on into the postseason. Basically, has to do with the fact that the Tampa Bay Lightning have essentially put Nikita Kucherov on LTIR. He comes back for game one of the playoffs, and they go on cup runs and win back-to-back years. Now, I get why. It's a cause for concern. And I was listening to the Chris Johnson show, and he was saying something like 15 or 16 teams are currently, quote, over the cap because they are utilizing the loophole of LTIR. Now, again, I get why this could be a conversation, but Chris said something that, you know, I also think about too, is once you bring that on, it signals a multitude of different questions that get raised. Legitimacy of injury. How many players can go on it? Is there a cap on how many players can... there's just a lot of other things that go into question. You know, if you bring in a player, all of a sudden you're now impacting the current players on your roster and someone's not going to get an opportunity to play. And I know that's not their problem, but the other thing is apparently this is now... I think it's a league matter. And the NHLPA has to sign off on it because it's part of the CBA contract that was signed by both parties. So if a rule like this gets passed, the NHL just can't be like, well, this is happening moving forward. The NHL Players Association and the players themselves also have to sign off on it. So both parties got to sign off, which realistically is difficult because the players want to make sure that they are insured, that they are covered if they are to land on LTIR. I mean, look at Shea Weber right now. Like, people could question the quote legitimacy of Shea Weber's injury. And if Montreal was good this season, you know, people start questioning, well, does Shea Weber come back? Like, you know what I mean? Like, those questions could come in. Obviously not. And that's a random example. But look at right now with, you know, there's a team right now, the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers currently have about $8 or $9 million on their LTIR, including Aaron Ekblad. And they went out and they traded for Ben Chiarot. They traded for Claude Giroux. And, you know, Aaron Ekblad's supposed to be back for the start of playoffs. The one thing, too, is that Florida was always going after Chiarot. They were always in on Giroux. They were all in regardless. Bill Zito was in no matter what. And they would have made some other changes to make it work. It was just a matter of someone else was leaving the roster. Maybe it's a Carter Verhaeghe. I don't know. And again, you could try and simplify things by saying, if we just follow the same rules and regulations throughout the regular season, you know, you could just do that in the postseason. But then there's emergency situations in playoff hockey. You've basically got to have like a specific set roster going into the playoffs. Those rules all of a sudden get changed as well. But I just want to bring up a couple points that we also have to consider regarding LTIR. One, the players on LTIR are legitimately hurt. Like, I was, again, Chris Johnson show, Nikita Kucherov was legit hurt last year. Like, he had hip surgery. The dude was out a couple years earlier. Tyler Seguin was actually hurt. He also had surgery. Like, they're in the timelines for these things, you can't make up a timeline. Like, and they also, the one about concussions, like, that's not a timeline you can set in stone. Like, every player's different. Like, Toronto right now, Jake Muzzin's been out for over a month with a concussion. Sometimes players come back from concussions after a week. Like, look at the NFL. Like, players go through a concussion protocol, and if they clear it in the 4 or 5 days, they're fine. The second point is, the teams still have to make the playoffs. Like, I know Florida's set right now, but Tampa Bay didn't have Nikita Kucherov all, was it 2 years ago? Basically all 2 years ago. He was missing the whole season. Tampa Bay still had to make the playoffs. Now they have a good team, but look at Vegas right now. Like, Vegas is in a wild card position. They were faltering. And they've got roughly $14 million on cap friendly on LTIR right now. You've got your captain, Mark Stone, Alec Martinez. They don't even have Robin Leonard on LTIR because they're like, what's the point? We can't bring someone else in. But Robin Leonard is going to be out for a little bit too. And they are doing everything in their power to make the postseason. It's not a guarantee they make it. So on top of one thing, utilizing LTIR is one thing. But for a player that makes a pretty good chunk of money, they're probably a pretty integral piece of your team. And when that goes missing, your team still has to make the playoffs. Now, Vegas right now is currently in a playoff position. I believe they're the second wildcard team, but Dallas right now is 4 games in hand on them and are just 1 point back. Winnipeg is 2 points back of Vegas with a game in hand. Vancouver is 3 points back of Vegas. Like, there are teams chasing them, and there's a legit chance that Vegas does not make the postseason. There is a very good chance that that actually happens. So you've got to actually make the dance as well. So I'm going to be very interested. But like, look at the other teams right now that are probably contenders. Like, Boston, I don't think, is really utilizing it right now. Tampa's not really utilizing it. Carolina's not really utilizing it. Washington's not really utilizing it. You know, teams like Toronto and Florida are, but like I said, Florida was always going after Sherratt and Giroux. The Leafs were always in contention for Giordano. Those things weren't changing. It was just a matter of what they were going to do differently to make it work. But that rule, and that's not a rule that's going to change in a year. That will be multiple years. I want to sit back and wait. And if it gets to a point where like 75% of teams are constantly using LTIR and are always $5, $6, $7 million over the cap right before the playoffs, and teams start fibbing about injuries on players and getting caught for it, that's when I can understand. But I feel like there's too many other rules that entangle the LTIR rule. So for now, let's just kind of wait and see. And if it becomes a bigger issue, and let's say a couple of years down the line, then maybe it gets re-brought up at these GM meetings and maybe something changes. But as of right now, I don't see anything changing imminently. Okay, so I'm going to try and cover here one of the craziest stories that took place in the NHL after the trade deadline. And that was the voided trade, as the NHL voided the trade between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Anaheim Ducks, where Vegas was sending forward Evgeny Dadonov to Anaheim. The agreed trade was Dadonov and a conditional second-round pick to Anaheim in exchange for defenseman John Moore and Ryan Kessler's contract shortly before the trade deadline on Monday. Now, here's the information I got from it. So the league stated it voided the deal because it did not comply with Evgeny Dadonov's no trade list. Evgeny Dadonov, before he signed his contract, wrote out a 10-team no trade clause, and Anaheim reportedly was on the list, but the teams and league were not aware. Now, I think it had to do something with the fact of, I don't know if it was the switch of representation. Dadonov was also dealt from Ottawa to Vegas, or signed from Ottawa to Vegas, and maybe something got missed in the mix of things. But evidently, whether it was an email that got missed, whether it was just something that got overlooked, and you know, the deadline's at 3 o'clock on Monday. That deal came down way after 3 o'clock. So they were trying to iron out all the details, but they had the call in. But nevertheless, I think that that is something that gets looked at. But here's the funny part about it. Evgeny Dadonov, since then, has kind of been on fire. Like, I'm going to go back and look. I'm going to go back to Saturday. So they beat Chicago 5-4. Evgeny Dadonov has a goal and an assist in the game. Vegas has won a couple straight. Dadonov has a 4-game goal streak in which he's got 5 goals. He has 6 in his last 6 games. He's got 3 assists in that span as well. And all of a sudden, Vegas, who were free-falling at one point, have climbed back into a playoff spot. They've won 2 straight games. They take on Seattle tomorrow, which is a very winnable game for them. Oh, and he was also named a Star of the Week because he had 5 points. Oh my gosh. It is like, you cannot write this. Imagine Vegas makes the playoffs and Evgeny Dadonov goes on this tear and is like a big reason they find a way to hang on. Again, they've got a lot of work to do. They got to win out most of their games because they're conceding 4 to Dallas right now and they're only a point up on them. So that win was huge. The last two wins have been massive. And what's even more amazing is the fact that Dadonov understands. He's like, it didn't really bother me. It's like, that's not really my part of it. And Ducks general manager Pat Verbeek came out that we respect and accept the decision made by the NHL. Evgeny Dadonov is a player we thought could help our team this year and beyond. He came out and was like, no hard feelings. No, I understand. It's a nervous time. Players are constantly in rumors and this is a business. And he didn't seem fazed by it at all. Walked right back in. He scored in both games. He's got four game goal streak, 5 goals in the span. He's got 3 assists as well. I love it. Like this would be a hell of a story. And again, we talked about the LTIR use right now. The team needs $9.94 million in cap space to activate Captain Mark Stone. And then another $4.8 million to activate Alec Martinez. That's almost $15 million. So even if Dadonov got moved, he's at a $5 million cap hit and signed through next season at that hit. So Golden Knights were trying to move a multiplayer. Here's the other thing I don't think would have worked for the deal. Is apparently with Dadonov still on the roster, as what I just read, Vegas has $405,000 in usable remaining on its LTIR salary pool. So every team has a cap in terms to how much you can actually put on LTIR. And this is why the other thing I think about this rule is teams aren't going to be able to just trade for injured players and then release them all once the offseason or once the postseason starts. Teams are capped at how much they can actually put on LTIR. Vegas has only got $405,000 left. So bringing on Ryan Kessler's contract, you wouldn't have been able to do anything until Mark Stone was activated. So they were playing a lot of, you know, back and forth and flipping and flopping, but what a story that would be. It'd be an incredible story if it did come to fruition. If Vegas somehow makes the postseason, if Evgeny Dadonov's one of the leading candidates to do it, that'd be a fun story. And again, I know that there's a lot of hate on Vegas and everyone kind of like wants him to miss because they've just been good the moment they've been a team. But you kind of feel for a guy like Dadonov. He played in Ottawa last year, they weren't great. He then signs over in Vegas. He's supposed to be a big part of the team. They get some injuries, trying to clear cap, and he's the player that gets shelled out and moving. Like, he's got 35 points this season. He's been a good player. And now he's kind of one of their leading guys with all these injuries on the team. And I think it would be a great story. So another reason why I don't think the LTIR things are going to be happening for a couple of years is you've only got a certain cap that you can spend and put on LTIR. Like, you can't just put $30 million in LTIR between 6 players and then activate them all once the postseason. That's not how that works. So a lot to, and that's just the very base knowledge that I know about the ruling and everything. So we'll see, one, if Vegas can hold on to a spot. Two, if anything does change, but I don't think anything's changing unless a couple years go down the line, it becomes a bigger issue. Now, this is the last story I want to get to here, and then we'll wrap it up. I root for greatness. I do. As much as I can't stand Tom Brady, we are lucky to be witnessing a player who has won 7 Super Bowls. We are. I love LeBron James. I want him to compete and beat Michael Jordan's record. I've loved Michael Jordan. I watched The Last Dance. Loved him as a person. Love the fact that he's a bit of an asshole to his teammates. Why? Because he wants to win. I'm rooting to watch Alexander Ovechkin break Wayne Gretzky's goal record. I want a points race to hit over 150 points again. I'd love to see Tampa win 3 straight cups. When's the last time that happened? And I want to see great players be successful in the postseason. So the Edmonton Oilers yesterday manhandled Arizona. It's like 6-1. They're 2 big guns. They dominated again. right? McDavid, Draisaitl, the clear leaders on that team and the architects behind that victory. I think it was goal and assist for Draisaitl, goal for McDavid. Anyone remember 2 days ago? No? They just got slapped by the Flames 9-5. They've won a couple big games this season. I just don't buy in. I'm rooting for it, but I don't buy it. Their goaltending has been sporadic at best. And I'm going to make a prediction here on Tuesday, March the 29th at about 11:49 a.m. They're getting bounced for the second consecutive year in the postseason. They're getting bounced. Right now, if the playoffs started today, they'd be playing the LA Kings. You think, the Oilers can beat the Kings. The Kings are pretty set in second place in the division. The Kings are they're kind of a sneaky team in that regard. And by the way, if they don't hold third right now in the Pacific Division, they'd either play Calgary or Colorado. You're going to sit there and tell me that they're beating any one of those two teams in the series? They better hope Vegas doesn't catch them. Because I see the Oilers as zero threat in the playoffs. Zero. We've seen it before. Teams shut down McDavid, Draisaitl. And even with the Evander Kane addition and Zach Hyman and Nugent Hopkins and Nurse, they're a two-horse team. And when those guys aren't going, the team's not going. Their best goaltender this year, their best goalie, has a .901 save percentage and a .311 goals against. That's the number one guy. Now, Nugent Hopkins has 41 points in 48 games. You're like, wow, that's pretty crazy. Of his 41 points, 19 have come on the power play. Of his 41 points, 33 are assists. He's got 8 goals this year. What about Zach Hyman? Zach Hyman's a great addition. 44 points in 61 games. He'll be fun to watch in the playoffs. He's physical. He constantly brings it. Again, I love Zach Hyman. I love rooting for a guy like that. And McDavid and Draisaitl, just stat-wise. McDavid, by the way, has got 98 points a season. But of the 98, 38 are on the power play. Of Draisaitl's 96 points, 36 are on the power play. That's over a third of your production has to come when you have a man advantage. And again, Evander Kane's been solid for this team. He's got 23 points in 28 games. He's playing big minutes. He's loving it. He doesn't have a lot of power play points. He's physical. He brings exactly what they need. But that guy goes when the two big guns go. And you are, even if you score 5 goals in a game, if you're giving up 9. Now, I was going to call that they were going to be swept. But I think they could beat the Kings a few times. I think the Kings overall beat them in a series, though. And again, similarly to people not buying the Capitals or the Leafs or the Penguins, whoever you don't think you're buying in the postseason, right? Some teams still might not buy Minnesota. Some teams might not buy, I don't know, Boston, Carolina, whatever the team is. I don't buy the Oilers based on their goaltending and their defense. I don't trust it. Don't buy it. Don't see it. Going to the Kings this season. Both their goaltenders have a goals against under 3. Both goaltenders have a save percentage above .900. Cal Peterson is a .274. Jonathan Quick has a .266. They don't have the points, but this is the, we've seen this with teams with the Montreal Canadiens. Remember Philippe Deneau? Why did the Kings get Philippe Deneau? To shut down the best players on your team. All he did all playoffs last year was shut down some of the best players in the world. Guess who McDavid is going to see every single time? Philippe Deneau. You know who else is a pretty good defensive center? Anze Kopitar. By the way, looking at the defensemen on the Kings, some pretty good ones. Drew Doughty when he comes back. Alexander Edler's a good vet. Sean Durzi's an up-and-coming guy. They just traded for Troy Stetcher. They might want to get Sean Walker back. Olimata is always a dependable physical guy. They're not beasts, but that's a team that might be able to do some damage. I don't know. Like, that's a team where, like, you know, they could surprise some teams. I don't know. I'm sticking to what I've been saying since the beginning of the season. I don't buy the Oilers because in the offseason, they didn't address defense or goaltending. Trade deadline came and passed. They didn't address defense and goaltending. They traded for Brett Kulak. Brett Kulak was the name they brought in. That's it. Brett Kulak, who averages, what, like 17 minutes a night as a defenseman, which is like third line minutes. He's got 70 hits on the year. It's 13 points. It's a minus 10. No, play 17 minutes. You know, he is who he is. He's not the guy you think, like, oh, that's going to be the difference maker on defense. I don't buy it. The league would love McDavid and Draisaitl to be in the second, third Stanley Cup finals. I just don't buy it. When you are, like, when you go into a playoff series, let's just say Edmonton beat, they play the Kings, they beat the Kings in the first round. You got to take on the Flames or the King or the Avalanche next. You're going to go in with a goaltending matchup of Mikko Koskinen or Mike Smith versus Jacob Markstrom, or Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith versus Philip Grubauer. They're like, yeah, you know, Philip Grubauer doesn't scare us. Okay. Philip Grubauer in 46 games this season has a 241 goals against and a 923 save percentage. Their backup goalie, Pavel Francouz, has a 253 goals against and a 918 save percentage. Both are better than your number ones. Both of them. Colorado matches you on every level. Offensively and defensively. Offensively, Kadri's 81 points a season. Right, and 78 points a season. McKinnon, 70 points a season. Makar, 59 points a season. He's only played 51 games. Oh, and they got Cale Makar, who's 24 goals and 73 points a season. Oh, they traded up, and now they also have Devontaeves, who has 47 points a season. Devontaeves, who's not even the leading defenseman in terms of points, has more points than any defenseman on Edmonton. Now, again, I am looking ahead. They also added Josh Manson. Dear Lord. Colorado's all in this year. My God, are they all in this year? The point I'm trying to get across is, yeah, you can beat Arizona 6-1. Yeah, you can beat Seattle 5-2 or San Jose 5-1. But when you play teams like Calgary and Colorado, and you get stomped 9-5, you lose to the Avalanche, you can beat up on all the weak teams all you want. It's kind of like what happened last year. Everyone accused them of this last year. Oh, they beat up on Ottawa. Oh, they beat up on Vancouver. Calgary wasn't very good last year. They beat up on Calgary. Then playoffs came. They played the Jets. Edmonton was favored. They got swept. Now, the Jets had Connor Hellebuyck, but the Flames have Markstrom. Colorado's Kemper. Minnesota's Fleury. The Blues have Binnington or Husso. There's not a team not with a goalie. Nashville has UC Saros. They could wind up playing Nashville in the playoffs. I wouldn't pick them against Nashville, would you? They didn't address it in the offseason. They didn't address it at the trade deadline. I cannot see this team having long-term success in the postseason until you dress goaltending and defense. I can't see it. I can't. I want to see it with McDavid. I just can't. A couple of the news and notes before we head on out of here. Brett Howden earlier on on Thursday of last week, he avoided a serious injury. He was stretchered off the ice in Thursday's game for the Vegas Golden Knights. DeBoer said Howden was sore but had no broken bones, said he was going to be out a while, but said that he was at the Golden Knights facility Friday morning. He was seemingly okay and is no longer in the hospital after being stretchered off the ice and taken away going to the hospital. He's probably going to be out for a bit, but it's nice to know that he is okay and avoided any serious injury. And then the Montreal Canadiens shut down. Jeff Petrie is going to be out indefinitely due to an injury. And Brendan Gallagher, as well as Jonathan Drouin, are going to be out for some time as well. This team's just basically looking ahead to next season. They've already been eliminated from playoff contention. Mathematically, them and Arizona, the only two teams so far. No team has yet to clinch, but I'm assuming that's going to be happening this week and more teams will start being eliminated as well. But there's no risk right now, and you're kind of just ruining your draft capital. You could probably want to get first overall to draft Shane Wright, who was at the CHL Top Prospects game. He torched the league, and he's going to be probably consensus number one, so you probably want to get in for that. And then you got a Shane Wright with a Cole Caulfield and a Nick Suzuki. Like, that makes so much sense. That would just be, that'd be a terrifying team for years to come. So Montreal shutting down a couple of guys for a little bit. I think Gallagher and Drouin might come back. I think Gallagher more likely in about a week and a half or so. But for right now, all those guys tending to injuries. All right, that about does it here. It's been going on a little bit longer than I thought it was, but I appreciate everyone who stayed for the entirety of the show. Thank you for listening. Make sure to follow along to all the episodes. Go back and listen to the ones you missed on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or on Anchor. There's a multitude of other platforms that my podcast is on, so if you want to go check it out, that would be great. Instagram and Twitter, ST Hockey Podcast. I'm beginning another piece on the Hockey Writers. It should be up later on in the week surrounding the Vancouver Canucks. And again, rest in peace and sending love and support to the family of Eugene Melnyk, who unfortunately passed away at the age of 62. Until then, enjoy the rest of the week. Stay safe. Hopefully some warmer weather is in our forecast for the next little bit. I'll see you next week. Until then, that's a wrap.